from UALR Public Radio and the Argenta Arts Foundation. This is a tin roof project on Tales from the South.
Robichon peeked out of the kitchen at me in the dining room. I knew something was wrong when he sent the maitre d' over to say, "We don't hire Americans."
Recorded in front of a live audience at Starving Artist Cafe in the Argenta Arts District of North Little Rock, Arkansas.
This was not French haute cuisine. This was simplicity at its finest. Food that would speak to your soul. Made in the same way it had been for countless generations.
This week, it's an intimate dinner with a notable Southerner on our unrehearsed show, telling their story as if they were sitting on the porch with you.
I recognized David Burke on the street in New York City. What are the chances? I said, "David Burke." He said, "Yes." I said, "I'm Miles James." He said, "Yeah, from Arkansas."
So sit back, relax, and reconnect with the power of a story. Now, let's go live to Tales from the South.
How's everybody doing tonight? So how about tonight's music by Shannon Boshier? Did y'all like the music? She has CDs for sale after the show, and more can be heard at shannonboshiers.com. All right, well, welcome to Starving Artist Cafe in the Argenta Arts District of North Little Rock, Arkansas, and to a very special edition of Tales from the South, a series we call the Tin Roof Project, where well-known Southerners bring their own true stories to life. Tales from the South is presented by the Argenta Arts Foundation and Temenos Publishing Company, and tonight's show is sponsored by William F. Lehman Public Library, all right here in North Little Rock. And I'm your host, Paula Morrell. On my left here, strumming his 1931 National Resonator, is blues guitarist Mark Simpson. Mark wrote our theme music and plays for us live each week. And how about our set back here? What do y'all think about our set? These genuine screen doors from the Arkansas Delta with mixed media portraiture are by esteemed Arkansas artist V.L. Cox from her Images of the American South collection. A portion of the proceeds from the sale of these works goes to Tales from the South. More can be seen at her website, greatfineart.com. All right, are y'all ready for some Southern-style storytelling? From Fayetteville, Arkansas, Chef Miles James holds a degree from New England Culinary Institute. His acclaimed restaurant, James at the Mill, which features his signature Ozark Plateau cuisine, has been featured in the New York Times and Southern Living, was a cover shot on Bon Appetit magazine, and has won the Wine Spectator Award of Excellence each year for the past 17. Chef Miles was recognized by the James Beard Foundation as a rising star chef of the 21st century. Chef Miles has made guest chef appearances everywhere from the storied James Beard Townhouse in New York City to the Salt Lake City 2002 Winter Olympics. He is now embarking on a new culinary journey in historic Siloam Springs, Arkansas, opening a new restaurant called 28 Springs, named after the 28 natural springs that feed Sager Creek. He is the author of two cookbooks, Cuisine of the Creative, a James Beard nomination for Best Cookbook of the Year in 1999, and A Tuscan Seduction. Chef Miles lives in Fayetteville, Arkansas with his wife Courtney and daughter Paris. Tonight, Chef Miles takes us along with him as he cooks in some of the world's most renowned and notorious kitchens before starting his own in Nike's and Levi's. Ladies and gentlemen, Chef Miles James.
I sat in the posh dining room of Joël Robuchon in the Hotel du Parc in Paris, trying my best not to sweat through my crisp white chef coat. Somehow I had secured an interview with Joël Robuchon, the Uber chef of the planet in his 3 Michelin star restaurant. After arriving in Paris just a few days before, it was my first trip abroad, one of my first times I'd ever flown in an airplane, and Air France's Concorde nonetheless. I'd come to Paris with my fiance, my beautiful Courtney, to get a European experience before opening my own restaurant in Arkansas. And I didn't get any more European than this. Robuchon peeked out of the kitchen at me in the dining room. I knew something was wrong when he sent the maitre d' over to say, "We don't hire Americans." This couldn't be happening. I had to work for Joël Robuchon. So I walked down to the street to Germain, his 3-star Michelin cafe, and started to talk to the executive chef. The chef liked me and was hiring me when Joël Robuchon walked in the back door and said, "We don't hire Americans." It was not off to a good start. It all began when I was 14. I decided that I needed Nikes and Levi's. My mom could afford Tough Skins and Keds, which was not cool. She said, "I'll pay for half if you pay for the other half." So I took a job as a busboy at Hugo's in Fayetteville. Fayetteville, Arkansas. Everything is awkward when you're a 14-year-old boy. Oh, yeah. But when the good-looking ladies walk in with their parents, it was downright embarrassing. However, once I got over the fear of facing the public, I loved working with cool servers and cooks in their 20s who smoke and drink and stay up late and dated each other. Major fun. I moved to the back of the house, made enough money to buy Nikes and Levi's, and began my lifelong love affair with the restaurant business. Fact. After cooking my way through college at Coy's Place, I thought architects were cool, so I studied architecture. One day, the owner handed me a brochure to New England Culinary Institute in Montpelier, Vermont. I enrolled, was accepted, took out loans, drove my Isuzu pickup truck, Squeaky, to Vermont. While in culinary school, I worked my way up the ladder at American Seasons Restaurant in Nantucket. I graduated from New England Culinary Institute and left my sous chef position at American Seasons to strike out in New York City, in Squeaky, with all my worldly belongings, determined to work for a famous chef. I blanketed the town with my resume. Lutèce, Le Cirque, Palio, Jojo, Union Square Cafe, but I wasn't feeling it or getting any calls back. Then I stumbled upon a restaurant being built at 100 East 63rd Street at the corner of Park Avenue and 63rd. I found the foreman, asked for the chef. He said, "You just missed him." I said, "I'd like to give the chef my resume." He said, "Leave it right here. The chef will find it." He slipped my resume over the nail on the front door. Unbeknownst to me, Chef David Burke was opening Park Avenue Cafe with Uber restaurateur Alan Stillman at this very location. The next day, feeling like I'd mistakenly left Nantucket, I recognized David Burke on the street in New York City. "What are the chances?" I said, "David Burke." He said, "Yes." I said, "I'm Miles James." He said, "Yeah, from Arkansas." I said, "Yes, chef." He said, "You're the guy who nailed the resume to the front door of my restaurant." "Lose the tie, let's go to lunch." We went to a Jewish deli, had pastrami sandwiches and beers, and I was hired as the lowest cook in the kitchen, the pastry cook. I didn't care. I was working for David Burke. Park Avenue Cafe, amazing, incredible. Dan Budd was the pastry chef. He was a god. The flavors, the shapes, the creativity, the artistry, the work ethic. All amazing. The first week, the baker quit. I went to the chef and I said, I can bake. He said, show me what you got, Arkansas. I made smoked red pepper semolina rolls, which were, to my amazement, written up by Gail Green in New York Magazine. She kind of wanted to date me, but she was a little old at that time. Anyway, so the chef hired me. That was ad lib, sorry. The chef hired me as the baker, but told me, no raise, and you have to retain your current duties as well as the duties of the baker. Typical in New York. I ended up working every station in the kitchen, lunch and dinner for David Burke. I was working for a gifted madman. Part inventor, part historian, part craftsman. 300 for lunch, 400 for dinner, intense. Park Avenue Cafe. I landed an interview with Chef Don Pentabona at Tribeca Grill. I walked in expecting the chef, in the office sat Robert De Niro. The major owner of the restaurant, shocked. I said, Mr. De Niro, it's a pleasure to meet you. He said, it's Bobby. I said, yes, sir, Bobby. He said, just Bobby. I said, yes, Bobby. He said, I understand you're a good cook. David says, you're the man for the job. He said, you work 6 days a week, lunch and dinner. You're never late. And when I come through the kitchen, make me al dente pasta with olive oil, black pepper, and Parmesan, and a glass of cold milk. Hey. If I stop in the kitchen, make it. Don't ask me, just make it. I said, yes, sir. He said, it's just Bobby. My girlfriend, Courtney, said, I'm living in Santa Fe, and you're in New York. How are we going to make this work? Jim Lambeth, her father, called me one day and said, I'm buying this old mill in Johnson, Arkansas, and turning it into a hotel. We should build a restaurant there. So we all hopped on Air France's Concorde to experience Europe. And that's how I ended up in Paris, being fired twice in one day by Joël Robuchon. I walked out of Germain, down two blocks, and knocked on the door just before lunch service at restaurant Guy Savoie. I showed my resume and asked to speak to the chef. Guy saw me immediately. He said, do you play rugby? I said, yes. He said, do you play soccer? I said, yes. I played neither. He said, tell me how these big New York restaurants work. Play on my rugby and soccer team, and you can work in my kitchen. The right place at the right time. My first job was picking mousserone mushrooms in the basement. I was happy just to be in the kitchen, but picking tiny mousserone mushrooms, the stems off of these tiny, I mean microscopic, mousserone mushrooms, that's not what I came here for. I asked Guy, I want to work every station. He said, no Americans worked every station, ever. I said, but me, I want to work every station. He said, you'll work with Richard Ekebus. Richard was an amazing chef from Holland. This guy was out of control. He said, work with Richard, you'll work every station. So I made it through Guy Savoie's kitchen. We're still friends to this day. The cuisine at Guy was like nothing I've ever seen. They would order carrots, shallots, celery, chickens, fish just for lunch, and did it all again for dinner. Live chickens in the street, live langoustines, the most amazing produce. 26 chefs in the kitchen, 14 in pastry, 40 waiters, all for 40 guests. Lunch and dinner sold out every day for 6 months. A remarkable, amazing restaurant. So, how did I make it through Guy Savoie? Maybe it was my ability to flatten members on the French national rugby team on the field. The right place at the right time. My stage in Paris had come to an end, and it was time to gain more experience by traveling through Western Europe, and most notably Germany, Austria, Switzerland, and eat and drink as much as possible. In Italy, I was blown away, for real, in the hole-in-the-wall trattorias could do with as few as three ingredients, squab, olive oil, and salt. This was not French haute cuisine. This was simplicity at its finest. food that would speak to your soul. Made in the same way it had been for countless generations, I found myself in Florence, surrounded by Italian art and culture. Ristorante Garga is where I learned the art of cooking. The chef, Giuliano Gargani, was a barrel-chested Italian man, infamous in Florence, where he is in charge of tending the roses growing on the bank of the Arno River. He would sell these roses to the Excelsior Hotel and take gondola tours with ladies every single day on the Arno River. Beautiful. His plump Canadian wife with sandy hair provided a bit of calm to his tempestuous personality. As well, she provided an incredible peach tort. The restaurant looked as if it was carved from caves, every surface painted in wild, bright colors by Garga himself. Many nights, he would be in his kitchen wearing his apron, and not much else. Belting operas, arias, and throwing down massive amounts of wine from nearby hill towns. His plates were constructed like abstract expressionist paintings, alive with vibrant color, unexpected and captivating, with lovely accents such as sprinkling of fresh roses petals with a salad or a fresh artichoke pasta presented like a deconstructed flower on your plate. He would counsel me in his very broken English like a philosopher to a student puffing away at his mysterious cigarette. Another artistic madman oozing with talent and creativity. My whirlwind tour ended with an internship at London's River Cafe, owned by world-renowned architect Sir Richard Rogers, his wife Ruthie, and Chef Rose Gray. I ate there for the first time, sitting alone outside at a table on the banks of the Thames, and ordered every single dish on the menu. Word spread quickly about me that evening, and I was hired on the spot. I got a big appetite. But where would I live? Sir Richard Rogers and Ruthie invited me to live in their guest home, in exchange, of course, for working for free. Actually, an apartment attached to their palatial townhouse off the King's Road, filled with original canvases by Andy Warhol and Philippe Guston. Once again, the right place at the right time. Chef Rose Gray was a hardened, middle-aged British chef whose passion for Italy was infectious. She taught me further about the simplicity of Italian cuisine, one that is driven by the freshest flavors, textures, and aromas depending on the bounty of the season. On a chilly October morning, I boarded a plane in Paris to fly back to the States. The preliminary plans were set for me to run my own restaurant back home in Arkansas. But first, I needed to completely round out my education and solidify my relationship with Courtney. In Santa Fe, New Mexico, I had a job lined up for me at the Coyote Cafe, famous for its Southwestern cuisine. Working for Chef Mark Miller, a famous anthropologist turned chef, his love for indigenous foods and spices of the American Southwest and seasoning traditions of the Native Americans and descendants of conquistadors was legendary. I sat in my seat, stared out the window of the plane as it lifted off, and I watched the Eiffel Tower get smaller and smaller. At the time, I couldn't have known much about Chef Mark Miller. What he would teach me about having a very close and special relationship with local small farmers. People like hippie farmer Diane Keaton lookalike Elizabeth Berry, who grows 51 varieties of heirloom tomatoes, 17 varieties of eggplants, and beautiful squash blossoms, and other items that look like they should be photographed by Irving Penn. I also couldn't have known how inspired I would have been by my native landscape, creating Ozark Plateau cuisine. But as I settled into my seat for the long flight back, what I did know was how incredibly lucky I'd been, how often I'd been at the right place at the right time, and how my desire for Nikes and Levi's had led me on a great adventure. And as I closed my eyes, I realized I knew how to dream and how to dream big. I was off to a good start.
All right, so thank you so much, Chef Miles James, for being on our Tin Roof Project on Tales from the South. So you say in your story that your first restaurant job was at Hugo's in Fayetteville. So along with the cool staff who smoked and drank and stayed up late and dated each other. What else was it about the restaurant business that had you hooked?
Man, this is such cool stuff. Just the whole family of a restaurant, the whole thing that happens when you come together as a crew, when you're passionate, when you want to take care of the guest, when you want to cook good food, when you want to inspire a staff, that's what a restaurant is.
Absolutely. And the customer can certainly feel that.
That's right.
Can you all feel that when you're in a restaurant like Chef Mom? So after being fired twice in one day by Chef Joel Robuchon, did you ever get to meet him again or run into him?
I have met him since then.
And did he remember?
No.
But you remember.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of hard to forget that.
Yes.
And so you talk about how on your first visit to London's River Cafe that you ordered every dish on the menu.
That's correct.
So how much did you eat that night?
I think 27 dishes.
Oh, my God. Was there a favorite? I mean, do you remember? Was there?
Frito misto.
And that is what?
Fried mixed.
Oh,
is what
okay.
It literally means. It means fried mixed, which is interesting to me. Have you ever had fried mixed? Mixed. Whatever you want.
Whatever the chef puts in
there. How cool is that? Fried mixed.
That sounds almost Southern, doesn't it? Fried mixed, yeah.
It's Southern. I do it now.
Exactly. All right, well, we have a few minutes left here at the end for audience questions.
Chef, you've worked in some awesome kitchens for some awesome chefs and prepared some awesome food, but what is the best and worst guest you've ever served?
Oh. Okay. Whew. That's a good question. We'll start with the worst. Okay, so there was this table 23. Never forget this. So these guys come in with an attitude, you know? We're busy. It's slammed. They eat the entire meal. They send back the ribeye. They all have ribeyes. Bone-in, 24-ounce, dry-aged ribeye. 27 days in my walk-in before I serve it. Okay, a lot is invested in this dish. They send it back after they ate it all. They said, yeah, you get it. They brought the waiter over and they said, tell the chef this is too much fat in the ribeye. Did I tell you we were busy? So the waiter, Jake, brings this back to me, and he says, Chef, I'm so sorry. This table wants me to tell you that there's too much fat in this ribeye. So what did I do? The dumbest thing ever. I take out two raw ribeyes on a plate with a fillet, and I said, hey, when you go to a restaurant, when you want fat in your steak, you order a ribeye. When you don't want fat in your steak, you order a fillet. The guy said, who are you? I said, well, I'm the chef. And he says, well, I want to talk to the owner. I said, you're talking to him. He says, I don't like the way you're talking to me. And I said, I don't like the way you're talking to me. I said, there's the door. He said, we'll never be back. I said, I hope not. Now, the best experience is when people love it. And that happens almost nightly at our restaurant. And so we're very, very happy about that.
You talked about your experience whenever you went to Europe and how these chefs treated you. How do you treat young people who want to work with you?
That's a really good question, and it's something that's dear to my heart, because when people come to my restaurant, we're starting a new restaurant. It's called 28 Springs. It's at 100 East University in Salem Springs. a young manager that works for me. He's worked for me for a year. His name's Jared Blackstone. He's going to be my general manager at 28 Springs. He's worked every position. This guy is talented. He's 27 years old, young wife. He's amazing. He says, Chef, why did you hire that guy? I said, Jared, he came in here. He said, I want to work for you, Chef. That is how I got every single job I've ever wanted in my life. I went to the restaurant. I didn't email. I didn't call. I walked into the restaurant and I said, I want to work here. That's what it takes. You want to work at a place? Go and show up. Tell them that you want to work there. Tell them that you're interested in the food. Tell them that you're interested in working for the chef. So that's how we treat people. We treat people with respect. We treat people that are interested in working for us with just that interest. So that's how we treat people.
So when I moved to Arkansas, I was surprised at the variety of fresh produce that's here. It's absolutely unbelievable. And so as a chef who's gone around the world and then comes back to what's available here, how do you try to highlight what Arkansas has to offer?
Well, this is Ozark Plateau cuisine. This is exactly what it is. We want to use local ingredients. We want to use arugula. We want to use eggplant. We want to use fresh grown herbs from our own garden. We want to use as many ingredients locally as possible. This is very exciting. Farmers markets are the best thing ever. That is what we strive for at our restaurants. We go to the extent of growing herbs on the rooftop at 28 Springs. We've already got an herb garden started on the flat part of the roof. We've got a drip system. We save the water from the drains and we put it back in. It's a green thing. We were green before green was green, man. It's exciting to see things beautiful like that, like a squash blossom that's just perfect, that's just the right size to put a little bit of goat cheese inside and drop into a piece of tempura and fry beautifully and send out. People get off on that stuff, so that's what I like.
So how about our story and storyteller tonight? Thank you so much, Chef Miles James, for being on our Tin Roof Project on Tales from the South. More can be found about Chef Miles in at the Mill Hotel and James at the Mill Restaurant at jamesatthemill.com and his new restaurant at 28springs.com. Thank you to our live audience, and thank you to UALR Public Radio. Tales from the South is presented by the Argenta Arts Foundation and Temenos Publishing Company, and our official media sponsor is AY Magazine, Arkansas's leading lifestyle publication at aymag.com. Tonight's show is sponsored by William F. Lehman Public Library. Additional support provided by the North Little Rock Visitors Bureau and the Oxford American, the Southern Magazine of Good Writing. You can download and listen to our podcast on our website. More can be found at talesfromthesouth.com. Have a great night, and we'll see you next week at Starving Artist Cafe in the Argenta Arts District of North Little Rock, Arkansas, for another edition of Tales from the South. Good night, everybody.
Writer accommodations provided by Robin Wood Bed and Breakfast. Studio time by Infrared Studio Productions. Graphics by Robin Steves at Studio B. Thanks for helping keep the art of Southern style storytelling alive, and we'll see you next week, either on this station or at Starving Artist Cafe, for another edition of Tales from the South.